Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. We're looking ahead to the next Jaguars game with Brian Sexton and former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, and Mark Brunel. Sponsored by EverBank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now.
All right, welcome to the West Coast. Brian Sexton and Jeff Loggeman out at the Marriott Silicon Valley. Just back from the Jaguars practice on Thursday and back there at the stadium. Well, I think
we're here.
Well, I hope.
We are here.
We're here, babe.
We're holding down the fort.
Great. Tony Baselli and Mark Brunel, how are you guys?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
How's beautiful Northern California?
You know, Tony, it was a little warm today.
Really?
A little uncharacteristic. It was probably close to 90 degrees inland today.
Wow.
But, you know, it's no humidity, and it was an absolutely beautiful day at the historic San Jose State Football Complex.
What else are you guys doing out there besides going to practice? What else is going on?
Eating.
Yeah, exactly. No, but it was cool. You know,
we've eaten a little bit.
We're they've got the team staying at a Marriott in Fremont, and where San Jose State is at is probably about 20 minutes without traffic. But of course, that doesn't exist in California. No traffic.
True.
You know, so it takes about 30 minutes, and it was a little bit south. And the facilities the Jaguars are in are kind of small college-y. I guess should be an accurate description of it.
Yeah, it's Mountain West Conference.
Put it this way, guys. You've probably been in some high school locker rooms. The Jaguars were in the visiting team's locker room there at the stadium, and then they walked across the parking lot to get to the practice field. And the visiting team's locker room, the lockers were about 14 inches wide. You know, so not a whole lot of room, but they're making do. And the practice field, I've seen much better out of practice fields, but like I said, they're making do.
Jeff, how does it compare to Stevens Point, Wisconsin?
You know what? Stevens Point, Wisconsin is actually better fields and certainly better facilities than the visiting team locker room at San Jose State. No
Tony,
doubt
you might
about
not,
it,
Tony, you might not remember. You were only there for a couple of days, but it was
jealous.
Well, you know, it's been good. Now, there's some good coaches. If you look at the list of guys who've come out of there, not that this is San Jose State tonight, but Bill Walsh, Dick Vermeil, Terry Donahue. They've had their share of football players through that program also.
Well, guys, you guys have been out there all week, and this is the first time we've got to catch up since Monday night. What's been the mood around the team after the losing in Oakland, staying out there all week and getting ready for a very tough test against Seattle Seahawks?
You know, it's just about like what you would expect with – the head coach being such a high-energy, positive-energy type of guy. You know, the players have gone back to work. I think that they're feeling confident. The early part of practice seemed to have high energy and a lot of noise besides the noise that was being piped in with the music. So, I mean, it was about what you would expect. I mean, it's not like it was an 0-2 football team and everybody is just walking out to the practice field like it's the death march. You know what I mean? Which can, that can happen. But I don't see it happening. The energy is still upbeat. Just a quick update on guys that did not practice, and correct me if I'm wrong, Alan Ball was held out of practice today, which is somewhat concerning.
Well, Gus told us this morning when we worked on the Gus Bradley show that he was really sore when he left the stadium on Sunday.
Yeah, he did not practice. Maurice Jones-Drew did not practice. And then Mike Brown and Mercedes Lewis were dressed, but for the portion of the practice that we saw, they were not participating with the team. They were working off to the side. So, that's a concern. I mean, you're talking again about missing Mercedes for the third consecutive week, and then Maurice, if he plays, which I would be surprised if he did.
Doesn't sound good.
How effective can he be?
Well, we've all been in these situations before where you, especially you think back 95 and early in our time together as we played here, playing against teams that, everybody outside of the locker room, basically, I mean, whether you listen to ESPN or listen to the fans or read the paper or any expert or even look at the line, which we don't pay much attention to, there's little to no chance anyone is giving this team of going into Seattle, let alone win, but even compete. I mean, are the guys aware of that? Do people talk about – are they talking about that, or is it just business as usual?
No. You bet they are. I talked to Chad Henne in the locker room, cramped as it was. And, I mean, his eyes lit up the first the first mention of, you know, no one really is talking about you in relation to this game Sunday. They're talking about the Seahawks, the noise level, the offsides penalties, you know, the defense, Russell Wilson, blah, 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 on and on and on. And he said, hey, look, he said, nobody's giving us a chance to do anything. We're excited to go up there and have the chance to compete to build our confidence, and we're going to win the game. We're not thinking that we can't do it.
But the conversation was there about the point spread because a USA Today reporter was
threw it all around.
Yeah, was going around asking about it, and of course she wanted to speak to Jason Babin.
Yeah, and I didn't know. I didn't know we had a Babin.
Yeah, neither did this guy.
So I mean, it's there, but you know what? There's not a lot of reason for optimism in a game like this. But the one thing I think that would give you hope is that the Seattle Seahawks offense has not found its complete groove yet. Now, defensively, they're playing very well in the back end, and I think on the front end of things, they're not generating a ton of pass rush. I think a lot of their pass rush is coming from coverage. You know, so, you know, hey, look, you know, if this team plays well, they've got an opportunity to win, you know, and there's always the surprise factor. You know, Seattle's a relatively young team. You know, maybe this team can go up there and catch them off guard a little bit. You know, so, hey, are you saying there's a chance? Yeah, there's a chance. But the Seattle team is a good team.
I mean, Jeff, I don't know about you, and I know you've watched quite a bit of the tape, as I have. I mean, the one concern, you know, outside of obviously how good they are in the back half, but both of their lines are very, very physical. Defensively, we have struggled to stop the run, and offensively, we haven't got much of the run going, and not a great matchup when you look at those two lines.
No, but the one good thing is that the Seahawks looks like they're going to be without Russell Okung. So that helps. You know, I don't know how much that helps, but it certainly doesn't hurt. You know, the Jaguars offensive line, the way they're playing right now, I mean, they've got to be better for this football team to have a chance. You know, and it sounds kind of like a broken record because that's what we were saying last week, but that's the fact. You know, they got to play better than what they've been playing, especially when they're depleted at the talent positions, you know, the skill positions. You know, they got to have some better play up front.
You know, and you guys know this, but when and have been in these situations before, but when everybody says that you can't, that is a huge motivation. You know, I got to think those guys out there are feeling that. And, you know, and the word is compete. They'll go up there and compete, and I think it'll be a better ball game than everybody expects.
Well, I hope so. You know, and the one thing, though, that I take away from talking to Gus this week is, you know, if there was ever a reason to kind of feel down and out, I mean, what, you've had two games. How many points you scored?
11.
11? Yeah, it was past beyond me counting on my two hands, so I lost track of it. The first three quarters of football, I think they've amassed about 180 yards of offense in six quarters. You know, the first three of the first game, the first three of the second game.
Yep.
You know, so a lot of the yardage and the production on offense came
late
in the game, which, you know, hey, the Chiefs and the Raiders weren't exactly worried about the Jaguars coming back and scoring because their offense was doing so bad. So, I mean, those aren't real positive signs. But Gus, you know, I give him credit. You know, he just keeps coaching. He keeps staying positive. He's trying to find a way to motivate a football team with some of the positives and then trying to correct some of the negatives. But, you know, we're going to go back to saying what I said on Monday night. I mean, there's – you know, this is a young football team, you know, and they're in the developmental stage, and there are no secrets. The secrets are pretty obvious to people. You got to have better players, and you got to have better performances, and until this team gets a little bit of both, they're going to struggle.
You're exactly right, Jeff, and you got to – it's to the point where you look at this team and you go into a place like Seattle, and – the guys in that locker room, and it sounds like that's what they're doing, and we've all been there. And as Mark said, when no one believes you can do it and no one is thinking that you have a chance to even produce anything, let alone win, it takes the guys rallying around each other, but it also takes somebody – they got to start playing better, and somebody has to start making plays. We talked about that in both of the radio broadcasts in the first 2 weeks, and we were waiting for somebody to step up. The defense getting a turnover, getting an interception – some big play to spark this team. And I think it's going to take that this Sunday where somebody plays, as we like to say, above the X's and O's. Whether it's the offensive line comes together and gels, gets the running game going a little bit, defense gets some turnovers, and helps this offense get something started.
Don't you think it has to come on the defensive side of the ball? I mean, the offense is missing so many playmakers. You have no Justin Blackmon, no Mercedes Lewis. You're probably going to be without Maurice. You don't have Blaine Gabbert. It's going to be the defensive side of the ball.
Well, I hope they can make some plays. Either. You know, the one thing though about the defense that they've been playing hard. You know, I give them credit first and foremost because they are playing extremely hard, and they're playing fairly consistent. Now they've given up some plays. You know, their ranking is, you know, it's okay, but also you always take into account, hey, look, you know, the opponent's not scared of your offense, and so they're kind of pulling back turning into a conservative offense, you know, and not really wanting to lay it out on the line. But, you know, the one thing that the defense has to do is get more of what they got there late in that ball game when Cyprian calls that fumble. You know, that's the only takeaway the defense has gotten all year long, and they better find a way to make it. I mean, Seattle 7 in 2 games. You know, I mean, they're number 1 in the National Football League at taking the ball away, and it's not going to be easy for this Jaguars offense. So as many opportunities this defense can give their offense, a struggling offense, the better it could be.
Well, like you said, Jeff, the Seattle offense hasn't found a groove yet, and if the Jaguar defense can come up with some early turnovers, it could be a different ball game. It's really going to come down to the turnover battle, as it does every Sunday. But, you know, it'll be a huge challenge, of course, but I'm excited to see it.
And I wonder if you look at the Jaguars on defense, they only have 4 sacks, right? But the Seahawks only have 4 sacks.
Right. Well, and they're missing some guys. I mean, Chris Clemens hasn't played yet. He, tore his ACL against the Redskins in the playoffs. Cliff Averill missed the first game with an injury. You know, so he hasn't been back to 100%. They're missing the guy that got
league
suspension. Bruce Irvin. They're missing him. So, I mean, they're missing their best 3 pass rushers. You know, I mean, if that's not an example for people to see why the Jaguars, I mean, name one guy on the Jaguars roster that could rush the passer like any of those 3 guys. You got one?
No.
You know, so, I mean, and so I sit here and I say, well, it'd be nice if the Jaguars can find a way to get turnovers, but turnovers typically come from affecting the passer. Sack strip, cause fumbles, pressure, errant throw. And right now, I mean, they don't have one of those guys that can do that, you know. And
they really haven't even tried to do anything other than standard rush 4, occasional 5, right?
Well, because they're not good enough in the back end, you know, like the Seahawks are. I mean, the Seahawks, if they wanted to, they can send 7 guys, you know, and play 4 guys in the back, play true cover 0, which means no free safety, and then play man up and feel real good about it, you know, because that's how good they are in the back end. Now, the Jaguars aren't nearly that good, so you can't expect to bring extra rush guys to try to force a big play like that, because you're just not good enough. And, you know, and if this week, if all of a sudden you're without Dwayne Grotz and maybe without Alan Ball, you're playing Demetrius McCray, 7th-round pick rookie, and Woodson, who was, you know, on the street, you know,
Blackmon
a week and a half ago. I mean,
well, and
it's hard to do.
If Ball doesn't go, that means Jamel Fleming is going to be dressed. I mean, he just got here Tuesday.
If you're Bob Babich, I mean,
you're holding on by your fingertips.
I mean,
exactly.
All you're doing is, you know, hey, look, guys, we just need to try to play. And here's the other thing that restricts you. I mean, a lot of these guys are new, you know. So, how complex can you get in your scheme, with a guy that may one guy might have been here this week, and then another one has been here, you know, 2 weeks, you know. So, how much can you do? It's not an easy place to be if you're Bob Babich.
All right, let's take a break. We've got much more to come from here in California and back inside Everbank Field at the HananiaAutos.com studio. More to come after this. All right, we are back in Fremont, California. Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Buscelli, and Mark Brunell are back at Everbank Field. And this Seattle offense features a quarterback that is almost on the tip of everyone's tongue these days. Russell Wilson, the read option, the entire 9 yards. Mark, what have you seen from this guy when
you, know
you watch Russell Wilson?
He's a dynamic player. You know, his numbers so far this season are decent. Nothing great. 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Yeah, 460 yards in 2 games, but what I like is the completion percentage is about 63.5, 64. That's pretty solid. And what he can do with his legs, what he did last year. You know, he can create, get outside of the pocket. It just seems like the team is they respond to him very, very well, and clearly the leader there, and clearly the guy that's going to make plays over the course of the season. He's a pretty special quarterback.
I think he's more advanced than RG3 as a pocket passer, just because he's got a real calm demeanor about him. And it's not very often you find a young quarterback that when he gets pressure, that he just reacts like Joe Cool.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to put it. I mean, he reacts just like Joe Cool. That ought to be his nickname, is Joe Cool. You know, instead of, you know, you got Matty Ice and all that other stuff. But when he gets out of the pocket, against the 49ers, he had one ball where he threw way down the field. He had another one where he had was scrambling up in the middle, and then shovels it to Golden Tate, the wide receiver, crossing the formation. And when the linebacker came off to go up and try to tackle Russell Wilson, he just flipped the ball out there. I mean, just real cool, real calm, and he's accurate. And I think he's more accurate than RG3 at this point.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. And what I like about him, some of his best plays are when things go bad. You know, when he gets out of the pocket, and I think I use the word create, he can make things happen, and it's because he's so poised. And I agree with you, Jeff. He's ahead of his game. I mean, he's more advanced than just a second-year player, and he's going to be a good one for a long time.
And what he does best is some of the things that RG3 did terrible last year. How many unnecessary hits did RG3 take last year, early in the year, and then he kept taking them towards the end of the year, and, of course, it cost him pretty significant injury. You know, with Russell Wilson, you don't ever see him take any unnecessary shots. He's still a dynamic of enough runner to where he can run that read option look and run away from guys. I mean, he's not a 4-4 blazing type of guy, but he's got very good speed. And it gives that offense a lot of flexibility to do a lot of different things because he's so good at doing different things. And, I mean, look at his numbers. In the last 10 games, we were looking at the numbers today. In the last 10 games, he's the highest-rated quarterback in the National Football League. I mean, that's impressive. And we're talking about a second-year quarterback. And you just take a picture of those 10 games, and he's been the best. That's crazy.
That's pretty impressive.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. If you don't want to weigh in. Tony, you don't want to weigh in on Russell Wilson?
Well, listen, what do you say? I like him because he is, for all the running and all the athletic ability, you watch the tape, and he's a throw-first guy. He makes his biggest plays when he breaks contain of the pocket, and he's always looking down the field, and he made some huge plays against the 49ers when he very easily could have run for 5 to 10 yards, but he was looking down the field and made some big plays with his arm. So that's the most impressive thing. Jeff's right. He is very cool when the pressure comes, and everyone wants to talk about the read option with him and his what he can do with his legs. But unlike an RG3, and even unlike a Colin Kaepernick or Michael Vick in his younger days, he is a throw-first guy, and that's why I think he's having so much success.
And it doesn't help him that he doesn't have Percy Harvin, who the Seahawks thought that, I mean, he
was going to be their game breaker.
They gave up a lot to get Percy Harvin, and they thought he was going to be the man. He's got the hip injury. He's not playing for him. You know, so he's having to make do with the guys that he's got. But those were the guys that he had last year, so it's not like he knows anything different. You know, Marshawn Lynch is a real nice find that the Seahawks were able to trade for. I think it was in 2010 from the Buffalo Bills. And his numbers have been very good, you know. So, I mean, they've got real nice balance on offense. They haven't seemed to have found their groove yet, but you can see it's coming. And, hey, when you play good defense, you got time to find a groove.
Well, they're
good,
Tony. And they run the ball very well, Jeff. I mean, they rush for 170-plus yards against the San Francisco 49ers, which is no easy task. And they were very physical. And I know Pete Carroll was unhappy with the offensive performance in that game against the 49ers, and they're not getting the efficiency that they want. But what they do up front, I'm very impressed with that offensive line and Marshawn Lynch, and the rest of their backs are pretty physical, and they're tough when they play that type of defense, and they can run the ball the way they are.
Well, Marshawn Lynch's yards per carry, it's not exactly what you'd like to see or what you would expect to see from Marshawn Lynch. The backup, Robert Turbin, has better numbers than Marshawn Lynch. You know, and here's the crazy thing. Was talking to the Jaguars pro personnel guy, Chris Polian, and was talking to him about Marshawn Lynch and the running game of the Seattle Seahawks. And I said, you know, two pretty good backs. And he said, yeah. He said, wait till you get a chance to look at the third guy. I'm like, well, what? He said, yeah, the third guy. He said, Kristen Michael. He said he's a draft pick from Texas A&M, had some issues at Texas A&M. But he said this guy might be more dynamic than the other two guys if he can kind of keep on the straight and narrow. You know, and that's kind of an indication of the Seahawks as a team overall. You know, looking at their guys that they cut go before final cuts, what was it, Brian, 10, 11 guys that were claimed by other teams that the Seattle Seahawks ended up letting go. And if you look at their defense, the way they play defense, first of all, they're very talented in the back end. But then the guys up front, the front seven, the linebackers and the defensive line, they play everybody. I mean, and Chris Pulliam said, another conversation with him a couple days ago, I was telling him, I said, man, I said, boy, they were waves. And he said, you know, he said, the best way to describe them, he said, they're like a hockey team. He said, you know, four guys come off, and he said, and four guys come over the, what are they, what is that thing called? Over the boards, and then they never miss a beat. And they're it's like a shift change. Yeah, line change. You know, so they're good now. I mean, they're good and they're deep.
Jeff, Brian, what are they doing to address the noise that they can expect on Sunday? Have they turned up the music during practice, or is this going to be a loud one?
Well, they have, and Jed Fish said it best today. He said, you know, we have guys on this roster who played in big-time college atmospheres, guys like Denard Robinson and Ace Sanders, guys who played in the SEC and the Pac-10, Pac-12 now, but guys who know what it's like to be out on that field when it is as loud as can be. He goes, do we know it's going to be loud? Yes. Are we aware of the, you know, false starts and, you know, they lead the league? Yes, absolutely. Are we worried about it? Are we doing anything more? No, the same thing that we always do.
Well, and the Seahawks fans last week broke the Guinness Book of World Records for loudest cheer, which was how many decibels, Joe? Did you got the numbers on that?
Yep.
136 decibels, is that correct? Am I using the right terminology?
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds right. I stayed at Holiday Inn last night. It sounds right. But, I mean, that's impressive. So, I mean, it's a loud crowd, but you know the easiest way you deal with crowd noise, and Mark and Tony, you guys know this.
Score.
I mean, you have some success early in the game.
Yep.
First down, stay on the field. Those fans can't cheer forever. If you string together first downs and you move the ball, they get tired of cheering, and you take a little bit of wind out of their sails and then ultimately scoring points.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much wind you're going to be able to take out of that fan base's sails in this week's game, because they're feeling really good about their team in Seattle.
You know, Tony, real quick, before we break here for news at the bottom of the hour, you and Pete on Mondays have this running conversation going about the read option and whether or not it's long for this world. Forget that for just a second. Do you think that you're going to see, especially because the college game is producing them, every team looking for a quarterback like a Russell Wilson?
I think what they're all going to be looking for is athletic quarterbacks. I mean, look at the crop that came out last year. You have Andrew Luck, who's extremely athletic. He does, you know, I think he ran a 4.6, and if you watch him play, not only does he buy time in the pocket, but when he breaks contain, he is a threat with his feet. Obviously, RG3, and then Russell Wilson is the other one, and then you back up 1 year as Colin Kaepernick, all very, very athletic quarterbacks that can hurt you both ways. And I think that's what you're going to see more and more of because of the spread game and what the spread is doing to college football. You're getting guys who play the quarterback position who are good throwers of the football but also have the threat with their legs. And I think you're going to continue to see that. You know, is the read option going to – are teams going to run it like the Redskins did last year? I don't think so because the risk is too much. But you're going to see it a part of the of more and more teams' game plans, like the 49ers, like the Seahawks, like the Redskins. And I think it's here to stay, and the athletic quarterback is here to stay.
All right. That'll do it for the first half hour. Jaguars Thursday rolls on after news from our friends over at News Talk WOKV. Another 30 minutes coming. Tony and Mark in Jacksonville. Jeff and myself here in California. Back after the news. You know, Baselli, it's a good thing you didn't stay out here on the coast this week.
Why is that?
Because you would have lost the crab eating contest yesterday.
I doubt it. There's no
hands
way.
Hands down, Lagerman tore up the Dungeness crabs. We were at a white tablecloth.
Okay, just stop for a second.
No. I got to finish. We set the scene for everybody. Hold on, and then you can take it. Right, now, wait. Just wait. So we were sitting up on the second level down at the wharf watching the America's Cup race, very, very effete sort of atmosphere, white tablecloth, nice crystal.
I kind of felt highfalutin.
Oh, man, it was big time, right? Of course, the boats are going so fast, the wind is blowing so hard, and we're sitting there, and they brought the crab. I mean, it was dead, but it was dead because it was gone before it even hit the table. I just don't know if you can keep up.
Okay, well, first of all, you know better than that because
– it's about dexterity with your fingertips. You've got to open up those crabs.
It doesn't matter. Have any eating contest, any time we go out to dinner, of the last four preseason years, and this year will be proved to be the same, Logman has never, ever eaten more than me. I bury him every time.
Well, it's very apparent. Just look at you.
Well, that's fine. I expect more and more respect from Brian Sexton to even fact.
I just thought he would have had you because he destroyed it yesterday.
It wouldn't be close.
You guys are rough. Yeah, you guys are roughing it out there.
Hey, you guys. Well, it's the only day we had to do anything. But anyway, you guys would not be real big fans of San Francisco. There's a lot of
and you are.
Well, we're
what's a good term for that?
Well, questionable characters.
Yeah,
we're gonna text you. Scott Kushner is texting you a photo that he took of a gentleman yesterday.
I've been
trying not to laugh.
I've been
trying to laugh out loud.
Well, he wasn't asking for money. He was asking for weed.
Yeah, right. We were there for the cultural side of things.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to say the least. So, but we're out. You know what we did yesterday? We got on one of those double-decker buses with the roof cut off, and it was Loggy. He goes, let's take the tour. And I thought, really? He wants to go sit on a bus for 2 hours with wooden seats bouncing around the streets of San Francisco?
It was great.
And it was amazing. Going to have to do it in London. But we were bouncing around, and we saw the tweet that the Cleveland Browns had traded Trent Richardson to the Indianapolis Colts.
You must have got the picture.
We want you to know that Scott Kushner did indeed contribute to his fund.
That worries me.
I think it was a quarter.
Wow.
But who knows what a quarter can buy these days?
Quarter house.
We just thought you might enjoy that one. So anyway, I turned to say to Loggy, as we came to a stop, which is about the only time that you can, you know, say anything move on the bus, and the lady held the microphone down inadvertently right in front of me. Well, I mean, that's just open season. I said, Loggy, did you hear? And the whole bus turns in. The Colts traded a first-round pick for Trent Richardson, and I saw a bunch of people go, that was stupid. What were they doing? Giving up next year's first-round pick for a running back. What do you guys think of that?
Well, my guess, Trent Richardson was a top five pick last year, best back in and some say
top three pick.
Yeah, top three pick, was the third best player in the entire draft. And you look at where the Colts assume they're going to be drafting this year, which is probably, if they go where they expect, middle to late in the first round. So you give up a mid to late first rounder for a very young back who was the third best player in the draft last year, and you feel like you are building around Andrew Luck, and you're giving him that balance in the run game. And so I can see from their perspective.
Here's my problem with that, though. You know, I mean, running backs, and it's been proven, you can grab running backs. They don't all have to be high picks. And next year, the draft is filled. The whole first round is filled with really good offensive tackles. And they need an offensive tackle.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have done it. Playing very well.
I wouldn't have made the trade, but I can see why they did it.
Well, here's another reason it may make sense. I mean, you're getting Trent Richardson, you know, and look, I haven't watched much of Trent Richardson because we haven't had many common opponents with the Cleveland Browns, so I haven't seen a lot of film on this guy, and obviously haven't seen him on TV.
He ran for 950 last year.
But we're talking about a back that, hey, he was a top three pick, and guess what? You don't have to be responsible for the $13 million that the Cleveland Browns gave him. You know, Cleveland Browns are the ones that are footing the $13 million bonus. So you're trading a mid to late first round pick next year, possibly, and you're getting a top three pick, and you're not having to pay him $13 million. You're only going to have to pay him, you know, $1 million to maybe $3 million a year over the course of his contract. That's pretty good for the Colts.
Well, for numbers, you know, dollars and cents, that makes sense. But, you know, we spend so much time, Mark, talking about the quarterback. It's quarterback's game. I heard John Madden, he does a segment on a station out here, the news station, every morning at the same time. And they were talking about the running game being gone. And Madden was just saying, look, I'm not longing for yesterday. It just is. If you have a quarterback, you win. And if you don't, you don't. And it just sure seems to me like, if you don't keep Andrew Luck on his feet, now, I mean, you might be able to find a top offensive tackle somewhere down the line, but I don't know. It seemed a little short-sighted to me for a franchise that's building around a quarterback to spend all that to go grab a running back.
Well, I think that the you've got to have a running game. You've got to have a running back, and we've talked about it here time and time again about the Jacksonville success. I mean, if we're going to win games, we got to run the football, and you know, 32 NFL teams would tell you the same thing. You've got to have a guy that can carry the load, that can get the tough yards. That's how you win in this league. You win with a good running game and great defense. And the Colts, I mean, they already have a great quarterback. So I think it's a pretty good move. Considering the numbers, Jeff, you just talked about, I mean, it makes more sense.
And guess what? This will be judged throughout this season next year. And they obviously think they're much closer to being a team that can contend for the division with the Houston Texans and get into the playoffs. And if he is the type of back that was drafted third overall, and you talk to many scouts, was one of the best backs to come out since Adrian Peterson, then, okay, if he gets that kind of production, it makes sense. But you guys are right. They are hurting on the offensive line. They're not great up front. And that defense, it's not like that defense is dominant and does not have dominant pass rushers or anything else going for it as well. So, I'm not sure I would give up a first rounder for a back in this day and age.
And it seems to me, look, that the transfer, you know, with the new coaching staff, with what Chuck is doing up there, you know, they're running the 3-4, and you got Lewis Nix, you know, the kid from Jacksonville, who's a 3-4 nose guard and, you know, a top 5 pick. They've got some good skill position players, and they've traded some picks away for some corners. It just seemed to me like the Colts have not addressed their lines like they probably should, here was a chance to get it.
If he rushes for 1,500 yards and you have Andrew Luck back there with him, pretty tough to stop.
It would be very tough. The one area that they did address was right tackle. Goster Chairless, I think, is a quality right tackle.
Did he on IR?
No. He played in week one.
Did he?
So, I mean, good right tackle. Unfortunately, the Colts lost their best blocking tight end in Dwayne Allen, going on injured reserve. I mean, so that doesn't help him. You know, the Colts missed on a draft pick this year. The kid that they drafted from Florida State.
Yeah, Bjorn Werner.
I watched the first game that the Colts played, and I hope that's just, you know, one bad game. He ain't very good. And I'm talking not good at all. And so I'm sitting there, and was he a high second for the Colts?
He's bottom of the first round.
Bottom of the first round? Phooey on that. That's a bad pick for the Colts.
Well, Ryan Grigson, you got to give him credit. I mean, he's got a plan, and he's not afraid to make the moves, kind of like Thomas Dimitrioff, and everyone scoffed at him when he gave up all those picks for Julio Jones. That one has turned out well, so maybe this one does. But just on the surface of it, I thought for a team that's early in the process with their young quarterback, that next year, I mean, if you go look, and again, it's early, but you go look at the number of top offensive and defensive linemen in the draft next year, it'll surprise you how many of them are there. And it just, to me, it seemed like maybe they were jumping the gun.
Well, hey, guys, we're going to go to break here in a second. When we get back, let's talk about, you know, we haven't addressed it, and I know you guys have probably talked about it all week, Gus Bradley going back to Seattle. What's it going to be like for him? And then also talk about the game coming up tonight, Philly and the Chiefs.
All right. Well, then, let's go to break. We'll come back. You're listening to Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio. All right, one more segment. Jaguars Thursday. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Boselli, Mark Brunell. Let's not forget Joe Fortunato and Scott Kushner, who are here with us in Fremont, California, and Linda and Jay, who are back there with you guys in Everbank Field. So, you know, you mentioned, Tony, before we went to the break, you want to talk a little bit about Gus returning, and obviously that's been a storyline. Jeff and I both tried to engage him on that this morning.
Yeah, not much.
He wouldn't go anywhere near it.
And I get it. I mean, you know, hey, look, you're trying to forge your own identity. You know, you want to certainly give credit to the coaches that you've worked for in the past. But, you know, hey, Gus is trying, him and Dave are trying to carve out their own unique approach in Jacksonville. And not to say that, hey, the vision's
ultimate goals aren't always the same, but maybe the way of getting there is different. So he was staying away from it a little bit, but, you know, he was very appreciative and complimentary of Pete Carroll and the coaches and the players up here in, or up in Seattle.
Well, I listen, and I know most guys don't want to talk about that because they want to focus on what they're doing and exactly what you said, Jeff, but it's got to be a little bit interesting for him going back to Seattle and where they had so much success and were very close to beating Atlanta and finding themselves in the NFC title game and going into such a tough situation with, listen, I mean, I think, is it fair to say undermanned team against a arguably the best team in the NFL? And my guess is that he's looking forward to the day where he can return at a later date and play his old head coach and that team when it's a little bit more of a where the talent level is a little bit closer.
You know, we can say this. We can say that he didn't want to talk about it, but he smiled broadly when talking about not wanting to talk about it. I mean, clearly he's fond of Seattle. He, you know, a year removed, he knows all those players, most of them, the coaching staff. You know, so it wasn't as if it was a real difficult subject for him, but for all the reasons Jeff mentioned, you know, he kind of wanted to stay away from it and focus on his team. And in fact, at one point in the conversation, he stopped and said, we're talking about the noise level and all of that stuff. He goes, I want to focus on our team because no one's focusing on our team, and yet we are. And that was his message, and that was a lot of the players' message before practice this afternoon. So, game tonight, what do you guys think? Kansas City, 2-0. Philadelphia was very impressive in week one, beating Washington in Washington, and not so much last week, losing at home.
Well, I like Kansas City. I mean, Pete and I had the argument on Monday night. I think Kansas City is the real deal. I think they have one of the better defensive units. I think Andy Reid's doing a very good job up there. They have a ton of talent, and it's a tough week for them, a short week playing on the road on a Thursday night. But I like this Kansas City team. I like what we saw, obviously, here, what they did in their home opener against Dallas this past weekend. And I think they are a better team, man for man, than the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think that Chip Kelly spread offense, up-tempo, where it's a lot of one-on-one matchups, I think it might be tough sled tonight because a lot of those one-on-one matchups favor the Kansas City Chiefs.
You know, I didn't think much of the Chiefs going into this season, but they've surprised me. I agree with Tony. They're playing some good football, a lot of talent, and, you know, I'm gonna put my money on them tonight. They look pretty good, 2-0. That's impressive for you know, how far they've come since last year.
You know, I like the Chiefs, but the Chiefs just was reading some of the inactive. Fasano is going to be out for them. That will certainly hurt the running game with Jamal Charles. The Eagles are going to get Vinnie Curry back in the lineup tonight, and I think that helps the Eagles. You know, so, you know, I'm a big fan of Kansas City, you know, because I think if they play the games close to the vest with a quarterback who doesn't make many mistakes and playing good defense, I think they're going to win a lot of games. But I think tonight the Eagles are going to get them.
You know, before we go on, I do want to point this out. Kansas City added, obviously, the right tackle, Eric Fisher. But they don't have a lot of rookies that are contributing to that team. The difference maker is the quarterback, right? I mean, they're 2-14 a year ago. I mean, obviously, Andy Reid has a lot to do with that. He picked this quarterback. But what does it say about Kansas City that they took a roster that was largely intact, threw in one quarterback, and here they are now, you know, 2-0 with a chance to be 3-0 tonight?
Well, and they also added a coach.
What?
I mean, you know, I want to make sure Andy Reid gets all the credit because I think Andy Reid's a good football coach. Now, I'm not a big fan of some of his offensive philosophy, but he can flat-out coach football. You know, and I think that they did a great job in Kansas City because, I mean, they had some talent, and I think they did a good job of identifying that talent and realizing that, hey, look, you know, this isn't a complete rebuild like, you know, maybe what David Caldwell and Gus Bradley were looking at in Jacksonville.
You're right.
This is just a little bit of a tweak, and if we coach them up a little bit, we feel this team can compete. And I give them credit for that. You know, Alex Smith was probably the perfect choice of any quarterback that you could have gotten in Kansas City. Because it has a good defense. If you get a quarterback that's not going to make a ton of mistakes and you've got a really good running game, you're going to have a chance, and he's proven it.
Yeah, it was worth it for the second-round pick to send out to San Francisco. All right, to Sunday's game, the Texans at the Ravens.
Well, that's
a good ball
I like
game.
The Ravens in Baltimore. Listen, that's a Raven team. I like Joe Flacco. They are beat up at the running back position with Ray Rice, but Bernard Pierce, their backup, is a very good player. And I think they, you know, they remember last year when they went into Houston late in the season and got blown out. And it's a pretty proud group. And listen, Houston's very good, but they've won two very, very close games. And one they probably shouldn't have won last week against the Titans. So I like Baltimore in the game.
Baltimore.
I'm taking Houston.
You know, despite the two close, you know, the close win in San Diego where they came from behind, and then obviously overtime over Tennessee.
Finding ways to win, and the Ravens, you know, they're not what they were. You know, they're vastly different. I knew they'd be a little different, but I didn't think that they would be that different. I'm taking the Texans, and I think J.J. Watt is just going to have a heck of a day.
By the way,
because that's the perfect type of game for him. You know, Ray Rice has got issues. You know, you're talking about a passing game that likes to be vertical, which creates time for a guy to get there. J.J. Watt should have a good day.
By the way, would you make a Chance Warmack in his comment about J.J. Watt being just a guy?
I think it was the headlines were more inflammatory than his actual comments, but he wasn't trying to be disrespectful in any way. I think he was just trying to take the right approach and, hey, look, you know, he's a very good player, but, you know, he's not Superman, which, you know, is the right thought process, but the reality is he's darn near Superman.
Yeah, but exactly. And just sticking here just a little bit longer, listen, the Ravens have two good guards. Yonda is a very good player, and so is Osamali, the young left guard. So, listen, J.J. Watt's a great player, but it's not going to be an easy matchup because the interior of that Ravens offensive line is pretty good.
All right, moving on. We really need to mention the Browns and the Vikings. I mean, they traded away their one offensive guy. They'll be starting Brian Hoyer at quarterback, their third-string quarterback.
Yeah, that's going to be
Vikings.
Vikings.
The Giants, 0-2, speaking of a train wreck, and headed to Carolina this week. And tough news, Tom Coughlin lost his brother, who died unexpectedly after the Giants game Sunday. So obviously, I mean, if he wasn't wound up enough, now he's got this on his heart as well. So the Giants going to be very emotionally motivated to give their coach something to be happy about.
Yeah, you're right, Brian. They're playing for their coach, and the Giants are going to get back on track.
I like the Giants.
I hope the Giants. You know, I'd like to see Tom get a win. Otherwise, you know, they're going to be talking like he needs to get fired. Two Super Bowls, and they're going to be talking about him getting out of town.
They will. You know it. Green Bay is at Cincinnati. We got a chance to see Cincinnati on Monday night. They got a lot of talent all across the board up there.
Yeah, but I don't see a lot of consistency in the Bengals. You know, and they're not there yet, you know, so I'm going on the other side of the fence on that one.
Yeah, I'm
going
to take the Bengals. I like the Bengals. I think they that defense is good, and the offensive line for the Green Bay Packers is not very good. Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. He's going to make it very difficult for them, but I think Cincinnati gets a close win.
Yeah, I think it's tough. It's hard to bet against the Packers. I think they're going to pull this one out.
It's hard to go against the best quarterback in the National Football League.
Agreed.
Aaron Rodgers. Here are two evenly matched teams, I think. The Rams at the Cowboys.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one. You know, the one area that has been a real strength for the Rams has been that defensive front with Quinn and Long and company, and they're very good. And the Cowboys have had some issues on the offensive line. I'm going to go with the Rams.
I'm with you, Jeff.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that one.
Lions at the Redskins.
This is a good one. I think this is a good tough game to pick. The Redskins have not found their flow. RG3 doesn't, you know, hey, look, Ron Jaworski's talking about how his mechanics are different. You know, it's hard to pick the Redskins until they show something with the quarterback.
But with Reggie Bush is questionable, and if he's not in that ball game for the Lions, they're very one-dimensional. So depending on him, but I think the Redskins get their first win.
I'm having visions of Ndamukong Suh body slamming RG3.
Oh my God. The whole league then would throw him out. Popular as RG3 is, can the Buccaneers do anything in New England?
No.
Nope.
No, it's
a mess.
So.
It's a mess down there.
Yeah, you know what though? I'm going to go against the grain here. I'm going to go against the grain, and the reason I'm going to go against the grain because, you know, there's been so much talk about Greg Schiano and Tampa, and from watching the New England Patriots and Tom Brady struggle with that wide receiving group, they just don't have a rhythm. And I think Tom Brady doesn't have a rhythm, and I think his young wide receiving core doesn't have a rhythm. You know, I think this is a game that the Bucs could beat them. All right, so just because of that, I'll take the Bucs.
We have 1 minute left, so here you go. Quickly, Chargers-Titans.
Chargers.
Titans.
I'm going Titans on that one.
Falcons-Dolphins.
Dolphins.
Falcons.
Smitty.
Smitty. Bills at the Jets.
Jets. I'm going with the Bills. I like EJ Manuel.
Yeah, I'm going with the Bills, too.
Colts at the 49ers.
Niners.
Bears at the Steelers.
Bears.
Oh, wait, you didn't give us the Colts
49ers.
Okay.
Bears.
The Bears.
Bears.
Bears and who?
Steelers.
I'll take the Bears.
And everybody take the Broncos over the Raiders?
You got it.
All right, guys. Thanks so much, Tony. We'll see you in Seattle
over
the weekend.
See you Saturday.
See you guys. Get ready to eat.